Good to see everyone. Well, the title of our message today is Making Friends with Our Money. And this is not the 16th week of the 17-week fundraising campaign for Cleveland Heights Church. Nor are we particularly, going in a new direction and need funding for this. Rather, we're just stepping through the Gospel of Luke and looking at story after story of Jesus' interaction with people and the parables he told. And he tells a very interesting story about a manager of money who is unrighteous. And we want to get to that, but before we go, I'd like to give a somewhat lengthy introduction. You know, a lot of the challenge in your life, a lot of the challenge in my life, a lot of the challenge in any Christian's life is to distinguish what is temporary from what has eternal value in this world. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. And, you know, we face this all the time. Like, we're constantly faced with temporary things that have very little value. And, you know, they're kind of like all around us. And to live a decent, respectful human life, you have to kind of have some arrow in you, a compass in you that points to value. For instance, I can either watch, five episodes of Baywatch, or I could work on strengthening my marriage. Okay, one is value, one has questionable value. You got to make a decision. You have to make a decision. I could either play a video game, or I could do something that advances my career. I mean, and I know we have to relax, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Anyway, but I'm talking about to excess. I'm constantly faced with value choices. And there are a lot of temporary things in life that I could build up. And the value of things has to be esteemed by us. And what is very interesting is that when you take this thought, the Lord is so much here in this thought. For instance, I have Christ in me, and Christ is eternal. That life is eternal. And, you know, when I believe in Jesus, I get this eternal life, and the life grows, and the life can bring me into all these wonderful riches of God's inheritance. But I am in this temporary world. And a lot depends on how we deal with the temporary things. Because in this temporary world, there are situations I get into. There are situations in my family. There are situations in employment. There are situations in relationships. There are situations in all those things. And all those things can be quite temporary. But the Christ that you have in all of those things is eternal. I don't know. It's a complex idea, whatever. Let me talk about it for a little bit more. Then we have to decide, how are we going to deal with those temporary things? And one way is to think about this. Okay, let me just give my life to the temporary things. And then it's like, well, I gave my life to watching all the shows on TV possible. And you say, well, that's stupid. Then you would say, okay, I don't want any temporary things in my life. Well, then let's go to Montana, to a mountain somewhere, and live, and take ourselves out of society. And we don't have any temporary things. You don't have those kinds of, distractions. Just remove yourself from society. Just pray, find God in a pure way. Just study the Bible. And the challenge of the Christian is it's somewhere in between. You handle a lot of temporary things, but you don't see the value in those temporary things. But you can't drop them. You put your heart into temporary things because that is where we can experience Christ. That's where a lot of reality is. That's where a lot of, that's where a lot of experience can be. But we don't let our heart get wrapped up in those things. We're for the eternal things. For instance, this message that I'm giving. It could be a really bad message. You could go away. It's like, man, Rex was just, what a terrible message. And the jokes were bad, etc. Or you could say, wow, that was a really profound message, and then you forget it by Wednesday. That's what you read these church planting statistics. You know, people forget the message by Wednesday. So really, it doesn't matter what I say. I could really bomb, and you all forget by Wednesday, and then come back again, and hey, start over. So in a way, you could say, well, this message is just temporary. Could be good, could be bad. But you know what? There's an opportunity right now for something eternal to happen in my message. Wow. Enter the Christian life. So you say, like, well, churches, you know, like, look at church. There's a church in Ephesus. You know, that's what, described. Paul visited Ephesus. And if you say, wow, the church is... And Ephesus is great, but you go there now, and you know what? It's just a ruin. There's no Ephesus there. There's no. So maybe in 200 years, you come to Cleveland, and it'll just be a swamp. We'll be gone. There'll be no church here. But what happens in church is eternal. What happens there is eternal. And then in Ephesus, where the church eventually disappeared because the city disappeared, there's nobody living there. You know what happened? There were people that saw church. And when they saw church, they said, wow, the church is his body, the fullness of the one who fills all in all. And so somehow they were committed to this temporary thing. But in the temporary thing, they got something really eternal and really marvelous. This is our Christian life. It's really interesting. So the Lord may take you through a lot of experiences. So you may go through a lot of experiences like, wow, I had roommate problems. And that roommate problem was so bad. I had no idea what to say. And in the midst of that roommate problem, you know what happened? You turned your heart to the Lord. And then in the future, you might not have a roommate. I don't know what the future dwelling will be. I don't know if we'll be divided into rooms and roommates. I'm not sure. I don't know if there'll be an upper bunk mate and a lower bunk mate, or we'll all have one big room. I don't know. But in the future, there might not be those kind of arrangements. But you'll be able to remember. I remember my experience of Christ in that way. And you know what happened? God used all the temporary things to make something eternal. And so he said, well, roommate, you're a temporary thing. No way. You know, I don't want to deal with you anymore. I'll throw you out. No, you can't do that. It's more like, I want to go through all these experiences and know the Lord. And in those experiences of knowing the Lord, what happens? I get something eternal. Okay, we're ready to read. We're ready to read. Wow, if you look at this parable and you look at interpretations of this parable, you'll read for weeks. Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do. so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, "How much do you owe my master?" 900 gallons of olive oil," he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Wouldn't you like to meet this guy?" Then he asked the second, "And how much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat," he replied. He told him, "Take your bill and make it 800. The master, look at this carefully, the master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. I'll stop there. So the story is very simple. There's a manager of somebody's estate, and he was dealing unjustly, or there's some accusation against him wasting his master's possessions. And so the master basically says this: "You're fired. You got to render an account. Maybe, think about like this. It's Tuesday," and he says, "Your job is over. Come to see me on Friday, and you're going to render the account. We're going to make all the books right, and it's over." And then the guy is thinking, between Tuesday and Friday, he's thinking, what can I do? What is my next career option? Well, I'm too ashamed to beg. I can't become a beggar. And I'm not that strong, so I can't dig. So I know what I'll do. I'll just look. Just call my master's debtors, people that borrowed things from my master. And I will reduce their debt. I'll reduce their debt. And then after I get fired from this job, which is going to happen, definitely, on Friday, I'm definitely going to get fired. It's going to end. After I get fired from that job, I'm just going to go to them. And they're going to be like, "Hey, James, thanks a lot. You saved me 450 gallons of oil. And you saved me 200 something of wheat, whatever. Come into my house. Stay a while. And then I'll have this life." Now, if I were the master, I can kind of see, I'll explain what I think his psychology is. But at first, I would say like, "Hey, not only are you a dishonest manager, you just ripped me off 450, and 200. But instead, he doesn't say this. He's just like, "Hey, James, that was a great idea." I think I understand his heart. I think I understand this. This is what I think. Have you ever been the leader of something and then you're surrounded by people, and then all of a sudden they're doing things like managing things for you or leading things for you, and then all of a sudden you see one who actually thinks. You've got the vision of the whole thing, and then all of a sudden there's this one shining star, or whatever, and then that person actually thought, and he didn't just have to do whatever I told him. I think that was in the manager's heart. I can kind of see that, and he thinks, "Wow, maybe he almost said this. Wow, I wish I would have done that. That was really smart. What a smart guy." And he praises him. He praises him. And then, Jesus told this. Okay, remember, Jesus told this. And he praised him and said this, that The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light. Just look at this. What a marvelous picture of a shrewd dealer. Jesus then turns this and he applies it. And if you don't get this verse, you don't get the whole thing. Right, Esther? This next verse. Yeah, okay. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Let me spend a little time on that verse. Number one, worldly wealth. In the original language, Greek, the original language, it's kind of like a mammon that is not righteous at all. Unrighteous. Mammon of unrighteousness. And the Lord commands us, you know, you should use it. Use mammon of unrighteousness. So that, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Eternal dwellings. You know, it's kind of like a view of a temporary thing that we all have to do, all have to deal with. It hits us right in the pocketbook. If you look at my wallet right now, I have $2. So we're talking about. And then the Lord just says, you know, this stuff, let me tell you what I call it. I call it unrighteous mammon. Mammon of unrighteousness. Money of unrighteousness. Worldly wealth. And if you look, you have to understand something about this thing. The whole thing, according to the Bible, it's all unrighteous. You know what is the root of every kind of evil? This right here. That's the root of all evil. The root of every kind of evil is money. And the whole system of money, you just begin to look. You know, if you want to find the bad guy, you know what you do? You know what the slogan is, the idiom is? Follow the money. And if you think about a lot of different dealings just with this, how much evil has this caused in the world? Oh, it is enormous. And then the interesting thing is, he says, this is mammon of unrighteousness, but what I don't want you to do is this. Oh, this is unrighteous. I'm a Christian. Throw away. No. I'll take that. No. Don't throw it away. You know, this can take your heart away right here. This can make you forsake God. This can bring all kinds of evil in your life. But don't throw it away. Use it. Use it to make friends. So that when it's gone, let me tell you something. One day, this will be gone. You know, if I was holding up a Roman coin from the Roman Empire, already that coin would be gone. You know, so, all that has to take place for this to be gone is the United States has to fall. That's it. Okay, then it's, whatever. It's not worth it. We spend too much. But one day, there'll be no more money problems. Can you imagine that? No more money problems? And one day, it's gone. But then, you know what? If you use money, if you use this unrighteous stuff, if you use it correctly, this unrighteous things, there will be a lot of people that welcome you into their eternal tabernacles. So you might see this in that day. They'll be like, "Hey, Bryce." And Bryce is like, "Who are you?" Thank you. Bryce, come in and let's eat together. Welcome into the Eternal Tabernacles. There's something that was used. And it was very unrighteous. It's mammon of unrighteousness. But it has an effect that doesn't go away. That doesn't go away. And you can say, you could say like, somebody may say, hey Bryce, thanks for that food you gave me. And Bryce's like, I don't know when I gave you food. Thanks. Somebody may say, hey Bryce, thank you for supporting that person while they preach the gospel. You know, Hudson Taylor, he was a missionary to China. He describes this one time in his book. Says somebody asked him the question. Somebody in China became a Christian because of Hudson Taylor's going over there. And they asked him the question, and he related this question later on. And the question was this. The person just received Jesus. It was marvelous. And then he was like, how long have you known about, you in the West, known about Jesus? This was 50, 60. And Hudson Taylor was ashamed. You know how long we've known about Jesus? About 1600 years. But you know what? That Chinese person may thank somebody who gave for Hudson Taylor to go there. Who knows? And welcome. There's a testimony that's born. A testimony that's born. And it's like, you can use this. It's not get it away or it's all evil. And it's so dangerous. It's the root, a root of all evils. And so you kind of like in your life, I want to touch it. I want to respect it. But I want to use it in a way that people will welcome me into their eternal tabernacles. Let me read this. This is interesting. This is more of the Bible's view of money. In 10, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So, if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And I like this next verse. And if you have not been trustworthy with, listen to this, someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? I like the Bible's view. I like it. I like it. I like it. I don't know if you see the whole picture. Okay, number one, you'll be trustworthy. You know, and I think it's really good for a Christian. And I think there's some relation. You know, it's not every good money handler person is also a good Christian. But also, it goes together. Like, I encourage you, handle money correctly. You know, one time I was talking to this one person. His finances were totally a mess, and I said this. How about you write down what you earn and write down what you owe and compare them on a list, and then whatever goes out, you know, whatever must go out, then you exit out from what comes in. And then the extra is you should save a little, give a little, and you'll know how much you can spend. And then he said, oh, I need to do that. I need to do that. But I can't deal with it right now. You know, and so anyway, this brother, praise the Lord, he still can't deal with it right now. But it's good to have a healthy management of that. And think about what comes in, think about what goes out, and then to say, I want to save a little, and then, handle it well. And then also, before anything happens, you just take 10%, just 10% is to the Lord. That's one way. Or there's a certain amount that I just give to the Lord, because why? I'd like to handle this in a trustworthy way. It's a responsible way. Because of this, it's someone else's property. That's what the Bible says. You know what this is? It's someone else's property. That's the analogy of the picture. There's a steward, and he's this manager of the master's money. And when he said, "Oh, just take the 900 gallons of oil away and write down 450. Actually, he was giving away his master's money. And then it's like, you know what? This is someone else's. And you think, well, no, I worked, I earned. And then, no, it's very good to see. You know where it came from? God. That's the Bible's thought. If you wonder, look at 1 Timothy. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything. Where does the money come from? It comes from God. It comes from God. And it's kind of like this. Here, James. This is God. Come here. Come here. This is God. I'm possessor of everything. And then it's like this. James, work a little bit. Hammer something or whatever. Yeah. Oh no, you saw something, right? Oh, very good. Very good playing. Here. And then God's like this. I watch you. I watch you. I'm watching you. You know why? I gave you something that's not your own. And I'm just going to see how you deal with it. I'm going to see how you deal with it. And then when we think of money, it's mine. God thinks of money, according to the Bible. It's mine. You're a manager, a steward. I want to see how you do it. I want to see what you do with it. And then, look at the verse. This is amazing. This gets me excited. Thank you, James. If you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? You know what that is? It doesn't mean real estate. No. Or it doesn't mean something you can buy with this. It means what you really, really, really have. What is really your own are the divine things of God. It's divine life. It is grace. It is forgiveness. It is all kinds of blessings that God gave you. You ask me, who am I? It's not my bank account. It's not my bank account. Who am I? I am what God has given me. That's my own property. That's mine. That's what's mine. And it just says, the way you deal with this reflects on how you deal with what is really your own. What is it? It's really life. Let me just read this in Timothy. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Notice, in the next verse, Paul does not say the rich should become poor. He says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. I like it. The life. They may take hold of the life which is truly life. I just think when I see this, God, you're so wise. You're so wise. You know what you do? You give us this so that we really know how to handle your life and what you've given us. You give us a life that is truly life, and we like to lay hold of that. It's a prayer, Lord, I would like to be faithful in this. That I could, number one, there'd be a lot of people that would welcome me into their eternal tabernacles. And number two, there'd just be a way I could be trustworthy handling those things, and then I could lay hold of that which is truly life. And God just works the whole thing in our life in such a marvelous, complicated, but beautiful way. So anyway, I'll just stop there, and we can have a little prayer. We can thank the Lord for all the money He's given us, or all the money He hasn't given us. but mostly for the opportunities we have with the money that He's given us to be trustworthy, to gain acceptance with our Master's money for the people that would welcome us into their eternal tabernacles, and for the opportunity to experience the Lord in everything in our lives, and including our riches, our wealth, and everything we have.